You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
And now on to a retired police sergeant, Bob Patterson, who joins us on the line now. He works with the McLennan Group, developing all kinds of practical safety tips for CARP members, and he's here to spread around that information. Hi, Sergeant Bob.
Good morning, Dale. How are you in this very humid day?
Oh, man, it's hot out there. If I were out on a boat today, I'd keep a very wary eye on the sky, wouldn't I?
Dale, after the weather report that I just heard on 740, I would be heading directly towards shore.
Yeah, I think so. That stuff can blow up so fast on the water, can't it?
It can. And of course, that brings us directly to tip number one, is planning.
Yeah.
And if you're a very skilled meteorologist, an amateur meteorologist, you can usually read and feel this coming. You or I today, if we went outside, would probably sense that it's very likely to storm. I guess it's barometric pressure that we're sensing.
Yeah, I think so.
But of course, the second one is keep tuned for weather. And something else I'll probably mention a few times during our talk today is you can get alerts on your handheld device or your computer, your cell phone. Can I tell you how to get that? And it's free.
Yeah, okay. How do you get that?
Sure. Just go to the Government of Ontario website, and then you go to EMO, Emergency Management Ontario.
Right.
And you'll find an icon for Red Alert. You give them a little bit of your information, nothing too stressful, and it's a fantastic program, and you'll be notified of major...
So you'll be emailed all the alerts and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, I get them on my BlackBerry all the time, and it's wonderful. Most of them are irrelevant, of course, because they're the other end of the province or something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
But occasionally, bingo, you're going to get one.
Well, if you get one and it causes you to to avoid some storm somewhere, it's already proven itself to be valuable, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Severe
weather, and it's other crises too, like a train derailment, even major traffic disruptions, bridge collapse, anything like that. So it's whenever we talk to the McLennan folks and CARP folks, we always stress effective, easy to follow, and cheap. And this is free, so there's a good example.
I know years ago when I was a sailor, we also had VHF radios, and they had all kinds of constant weather information. I assume some boaters still rely on that, don't they?
Yes, they do. And you brought up a good point again, Dale, is when we were talking about boating safety and weather, you almost have to divide it into two categories, large pleasure craft and small pleasure craft. Because as you can imagine, not many people in rowboats, 12-foot fishing boats, or canoes
have VHF.
Are have that VHF. And there's
no,
a whole
for sure.
different set of rules.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, but there are a lot of boats out there in the water at any given day, all shapes and sizes, right?
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. But you know something? If we think back, the last time you heard a news report of a large boat getting into trouble, leading to
you're right.
drownings.
It's the 14-footers, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Those people who operate the big cruisers, they may be amateurs, but boy, are they skilled.
Yeah.
They know their stuff about communications, navigation, weather reading. They're very good.
Yeah, okay. Now, can we talk a bit about if it's a small boat such as that, getting it up the highway? Your good friend Dave Woodford is always talking to us about stopping cars heading north on a holiday weekend and always checking to make sure that the boat is being trailered properly. What kind of good advice can you give us in that category?
Sure, I'd be happy to, because it is very important, as Dave has mentioned several times. A couple things: the driver and the towing vehicle and the trailer have to be correct. So in other words, if you pick up a new boat and you've never trailered anything before, you can expect trouble. You have to be comfortable backing the thing up. You have to be familiar with the primary and secondary fastening, in other words, the hitch ball.
Yeah.
And then the two chains.
And the chains.
Crisscrossed, as you know.
Yeah.
For two important reasons, which I think are worth mentioning. If the primary attachment, the big ball, becomes dislodged or not attached, the chains will prevent the trailer from swaying to the extreme right or extreme left.
I've had that happen, where the ball was secured. And I was trailering, what was that, about an 18-foot boat, something like that. And I hit a bump, and it bounced out. It was in, but I guess not quite tightly enough. Mm-hmm. And the chains caught it, and I slowed down and fixed it up. But without the chains, I would have lost the boat.
Sure. And the other thing that the crossed chain does is it prevents the hitch, the attachment of the trailer,
from hitting the road,
if you will, from dropping to the pavement and digging into the pavement. You can imagine the kind of the jackknifing mechanics that would take over there. So that chain performs two critical functions.
Yeah.
A few other things. If you've never backed that boat and trailer down a ramp, especially with an audience, we're all professionals when we're watching.
Why is it with an audience it takes three times as long?
Yep. You've done this, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. And there's lots of little things that you should be aware of. For instance, when you're backing that boat up, if you want to have a safe trip to the ramp and home again, one of the first things you should do is you get out of your vehicle and you disconnect the lighting, you know, the electrical connection.
Yes, that's a good first step, right?
Yeah, because you don't want the hot bulbs to be submerged in the water when you back into the water. Then when you're going home, someone like Dave Woodford and his OPP pals will stop you because you've got no brake lights.
That's right.
The directional indicators aren't working. And you're wondering, well, gee, it's a fairly new trailer. Well, there's what happened.
Yeah.
The hot electrical components were dipped in cold water, and, of course, they frazzled.
Well, and the first thing you do when you're backing down a ramp is you put the brake on. So brake lights come on, bingo, you're done, unless you disconnect it. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. What else? What else? What other mistakes?
Well, equipment, and I'm going to focus on small craft because that seems to be where the very sad and tragic deaths occur.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the equipment that you need?
On board that's required, absolutely.
Yeah, by law. Well, the first and most obvious one is personal flotation devices.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like a pretty basic thing, but I'll tell you, and it seems to be a young person thing, young males, who, by the way, drown more often.
Yeah.
They're just so reluctant to wear them. And my two sons, and I'll tell you right up, I've got two mid-20 boys, 20 years of age, and they don't like wearing the things. We've got a boat, we've got two canoes and a kayak, and it just drives me nutty.
Are the ones that have the cartridge, the gas cartridges in them and only inflate at the last minute if you need them, are they considered as safe? I guess they wouldn't be, because if you hit your head, you wouldn't be able to pull the string.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
And hitting your head occurs. Can I give you a scenario?
Yeah.
There's a youth component, there's a male component, and there's an alcohol component.
Yeah.
A disproportionate number of bodies is recovered when the rescue mission turns into a recovery mission. You know, you're familiar with that terminology.
Yeah.
When the bodies are recovered with the males, often the zipper's down. And what's happened, someone's been out fishing, had three or four beers, they stand up in the boat to relieve themselves, that's when they lose it, and over they go. So many times these aren't happenstance, it's sort of a chain of events, if you will, Dale.
That happens on big sailboats too, don't kid yourself.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
No question. Yeah.
Yeah.
But standing up in a 12-foot aluminum boat, out of desperation when you have to go, it's pretty tipsy. So certainly a proper flotation device.
What else do you need now? Okay, the flotation device.
Floating rope.
Yeah.
And the floating is kind of a nice thing to mention.
Yeah.
Whistle, air horn is a great thing to have and mandatory. Flashlight and a bailing bucket.
Yeah.
And I've got my own personal tip from my boating experience with the bailing bucket.
Yeah.
I have two. I just tuck one inside the other. One is probably a container that will hold maybe 2 or 3 liters. And the other thing you can squish in there is an old margarine container. And why? Because it's flexible and kind of conforms, if you know what I mean.
Scooping out the bottom of the boat.
Yeah, if you're trying to get into
the corner, bailing,
scoop it out.
Yeah.
It's a handy thing. It costs nothing.
Yeah, and the rope, for those who haven't followed through and figured this out, the rope needs to float because...
Yeah. Well, sure, if you throw it to someone and they're desperate, let's say, you know, hypothermia, they haven't got the coordination that they normally have, they're trying to flail around and find the rope. Once it sinks out of
sight... If it sinks, it's no good, that's right.
Your chances of grabbing that rope are next to none.
Yeah. Is that the total list, then, of what you need on the boat?
And did I mention a paddle?
No, I don't think so.
Even if it's a power boat, you've got to have that paddle, too.
Yeah. Is it one paddle or two? I guess just one paddle, right?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't have the regs in front of me. But,
yeah.
And I don't even recall from my enforcement days. I think it's one.
Yeah.
Two in a substantial boat would certainly make sense.
I guess if it was a big enough boat. Now, the thing that came up the other day when we were talking about inclement weather was, in fact, lightning. How do we keep ourselves as safe as we can if there's the possibility of lightning?
Sure. Let's go back to the large boat, small boat situation. The large boat, which, by the way, is going to take an awful lot longer to make a dash for shore.
Yeah.
We need a proper place to dock. There's electrical modifications that can be made to the boat well before the storm strikes, as you can imagine. And what they basically do is there's a conduct. As you know, the lightning hits the highest part of the boat, and the sailboat would be the mast, and follows the path of least resistance down into the water where it grounds out. And I don't understand the electronics involved, but I do know that the conductor will carry the electricity from the tip of the mast down to a metal plate near the hull of the boat.
Yeah.
And that, it certainly doesn't eliminate the damage to the boat, but it minimizes it.
Well, when I was hit by lightning on my boat, it did not eliminate the damage, but I'm alive to speak to you, so it may have done some good.
That's right. Also, the secondary problem is if you are struck by lightning in a larger craft with electrical components, pumps, communications equipment, lighting, chances are very good there's going to be nothing left of it.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah. So,
what if you're on land? Bring us to shore a bit, because the concern was after that Whitby incident on the weekend, and people were starting to phone in, Bob, and they were asking, well, what would you do, for example, if you're out in the middle of a golf course?
Yeah. First of all, early warning. Look for those cumulus clouds and listen to the radio, and also have that red alert thing going on your handheld. We almost all have one now.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a severe weather storm, you'll know about it. Now, it may not.
And don't go golfing.
Disturbance.
And don't go golfing on that day, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you do decide to go golfing, tonight would be a good example. Look at all the mums and dads taking their children to play soccer.
Yeah.
No one wants to be disappointed, so you sort of push the envelope a little bit, and you encourage. You know, you have a tendency to move ahead with your activity, but you're going to have to recognize the fact that there is a substantial risk, especially with a field with hundreds of children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have these multiple soccer pitches in one big area.
Oh, for sure.
Someone has to make an executive decision pretty early and say, this is not going to work. And the woman who you mentioned just prior to our show that said, you know, run,
mm-hmm.
it's not bad advice. If you are caught, the first tendency, probably you and I would do the same thing, is you head to a tree. You don't want to get your...
No, I wouldn't head to a tree. I wouldn't head to a tree.
Head for low ground, whether it's a drainage ditch or a bridge, something like that.
Or flatten yourself out as much as possible if, in fact, you can't even find a drainage ditch.
Exactly.
Right?
Last ditch effort, pardon the pun about the ditch, if you got...
Yeah, no, I hear you. Yeah.
But the last effort is, you're quite right, lay down.
Yeah.
And also, fish. And can we go back to boating just for a second?
Yeah, sure.
We
were popping onshore and offshore all over. All right, hang on. Let me just remind people if they have a question to call, and we'll go back offshore again, okay?
Sure.
Sergeant Bob is here to answer your safety questions. The numbers are 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Talking to Sergeant Bob about the safety issues both on land, when it comes to things like severe storms and lightning, and on the water as well, in terms of marine safety. Bob, Mary had an interesting thought. We were talking during that break there. She said, if you were stuck on a golf course, get down in a sand trap.
Makes perfect sense.
Wouldn't that be good?
Well, they're traditionally lower than the rest of the surface, and
exactly.
Also can be a little more comfortable, isn't it? Good idea, Mary.
And while you're there, you could look for a few balls. Now, listen, you wanted to go back on the water, so why are we going back on the water this time?
There's a couple things that I hope we have time to mention, just even briefly, Dale, is hypothermia, and being a boater, you know about that, and also alcohol should be mentioned, too.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk alcohol first.
Mm-hmm. I certainly don't want to sound like a temperance worker, because I'm not. However, people just have to realize, first of all, the criminal code for impaired operation is Canada-wide, and it applies to motor vehicles, vessels, and aircraft.
Yeah.
So the same risks and the same legal repercussions, whether you're impaired behind the wheel of your car on the 400 going north or in your boat when you get there. So that's
same thing, right?
Mind.
Same thing.
Yes, exactly. And you end up with the upon conviction, well, at the arrest and conviction, suspended licenses for your motor vehicle. So a wild weekend is going to be pretty disruptive.
You can get your motor vehicle license suspended for impaired boating.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think people understand and appreciate that part.
Yeah, Dave's probably talked about that.
Yeah, he has. He has, because I'm sure he's written some of those tickets, as you can well imagine. So have you imagined back in your day.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay.
And also, aside from the legal component, Dale, I mean, just think about it. It's a complex task, looking after yourself and passengers, especially if they're children.
Yeah.
You just have to have your wits about you.
Well, if it's your boat and you've invited people on your boat, you assume that. I always took it seriously whenever I had people on my sailboat that it was my responsibility to keep them safe.
Exactly.
As the so-called captain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, the other thing you mentioned was hypothermia.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's the experts, the physiologists are learning more about it all the time. And I think, let's take today for an example. If you were out on a boat today, you would basically be baking. And it's hard to imagine just how cold deep water can be.
Yeah.
It's probably the majority of locations, whether it's off the shore in Lake Ontario.
Lake Ontario is particularly cold, isn't it?
Yeah, Georgian Bay, Lake Huron, where I boat.
Yeah.
You know, there are pockets where you go in, and it is just almost freezing. I mean,
it's
painful.
Yeah.
And you can imagine that your muscle control and your cognitive ability is going to go right down the tubes in, probably less than a minute. The other thing that the physiologists are finding out now is the gasping reflex, and they believe that what happens when you hit that water, you're actually one of those,
and you're
taking a mouthful or a lungful of water down.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that.
That gasping reaction. You can imagine trying to recover and swim correctly, figure out your direction. It would be next to impossible.
Okay. All right. Here's Sylvia on the line from Toronto, and she has a question. Sylvia, do you have a question for Sergeant Bob?
I was wondering, we were on Lake Simcoe. I was with my daughter there a couple years ago, and this man, he had a small boat, and his motor, which was attached on the back, had come loose.
Yeah.
And he had nothing to tighten it with. So my son-in-law pulled over, and I suggested you have a small tool kit on your boat, because you never know what you might need.
Well, especially if I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
he couldn't have got in, because the bolts at the back had come off and the motor was just about ready to fall in, and he was alone.
You mean he was on the water? No, hang on. He was on the water. He was trailering it.
No, he was on the water.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And the motor came off.
It didn't come right off, but it was loose, and he had nothing to tighten it up with. So my son-in-law, he carried one all the time. So I suggest that you don't have to have a big one, just like a small thing that in case you run into difficulty.
Well, Sylvia, thanks. I would think that's pretty central to safety, making sure the outboard doesn't come off.
And in fact, Dale, most small to medium-sized outboards, there's an option that you have is to drill a few holes in the transom and use the clamping system that we're familiar with, and also a couple stainless steel bolts and nuts, which is recommended. But Sylvia is quite right. We could almost go a step further and mention that the toolkit that normally comes with a recreational outboard is, and I hate to be critical of the industry here, is almost useless.
Really, eh?
The quality... and it would be pretty frustrating to have the little wrench they have either slice your finger or, fracture when you need it most. I've got a few extra things that I threw into a roll, but Sylvia's quite right. It's crucial. You know, we've got to replace the propeller, the cotter pin, a wrench to undo the nut that holds the prop on, that sort of thing.
Yeah, replace one pin in the propeller and you'll know you don't have the... Then you'll know what tools you need, right?
There you go.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. Yeah, and another thing you can put in that kit is a couple batteries, because the marine flashlight that you usually get at the department store will last less than a season.
There's
humidity.
But in terms of new technology there, what do you think about these new light-emitting diode flashlights? To me, they seem to be quite good, and the batteries last a long time because of the low drain from the light-emitting diodes. Have you seen those?
I've got one. It's the last one that I bought this spring, but I have no idea how it is in terms of durability, Dale. But I'll bet you're right. They've got to be better than the traditional, you know.
Anything would be better than those things. I've never had one that really worked very long-term for me.
Mm-hmm. Me
neither. You know, first thing to go. Here's John calling from Toronto. John, do you have a question?
More of a comment, particularly with smaller craft like canoes and rowboats and things like that. In my experience, it's always better, I think, to, if you're going out on the water, to go upwind so that if anything happens, you've at least got the wind to help assist blow you back.
Well, depending on where you're going, you may not be able to go upwind if you're trying to get somewhere. You know what I mean?
I understand. But just to be aware of the wind factor, that can do a lot to a small boat.
Well, that's certainly, thanks very much for the call, John. That's certainly true, isn't it? Boaters have to appreciate the wind.
John is bang on. If, as you mentioned, you don't have to go one way or the other. In other words, it's a small recreational outing.
Yeah, you're just going out for a spin around on the water, right?
Go into the wind. And the natural tendency, too, for an inexperienced boater is to do the exact opposite.
I suppose.
Because it's easier paddling.
Yeah. And we should talk for a minute or two about the boat operators. What do you call them? I guess you call them a license?
Yes, a license, yeah.
Everyone must have one of those now, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Absolutely everybody.
For a power boat.
Gone are the days when you could simply go for a zip in that little power boat unless you have one of these, what is it called? The personal...
Pleasure craft?
The pleasure craft operators thing me? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's probably the technical term.
And that, of course, is the minimum requirement.
Yeah, exactly.
An experienced boater will tell you right away you'd best take, like, weather, you know, reading the weather and navigational, but that pleasure craft operator's license is the minimum.
And well, that's the minimum, and if you get stopped and you don't have it, you're going to get nailed.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
And if we could, one important point, too, we should probably talk about, Dale, especially when it comes to small craft, is the people who are using or renting a boat or a canoe, as John just mentioned, for the first time. With a lot of new Canadians, the statistics are revealing that, you know, the immigrant families, for instance, they're very busy learning the language, career, housing, that sort of thing. Swimming lessons and boating lessons may not be high on the priority list.
Yeah.
So you're getting groups and family members overcrowding a small boat, not because of negligence, but almost because of inexperience.
Yeah.
Can't swim, and they're finding themselves in trouble. Where if you grew up in Ontario, had some exposure to it as a child, you know, you're far better off. But there are agencies making huge headways, you know, Life Saving Society, Red Cross, swimming lessons and boating lessons. Thankfully, they're really, well, they're minimizing.
Bob, thank you very much for all the great advice today.
Thank you, Dale. It's a pleasure talking with you. And boy, ever timely with this kind of heat.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks a lot now. Bye-bye.
Bye, Dale.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.